August 16th, 2001. My name is Mary Alpha Bircha, and I'm interviewing Josiah P. Huntoon at 78 Broadway, Bayside, Northport, Maine. Joe, can you tell me how your family came to Bayside, when, what year, and how they got here?
My earliest knowledge is my great-grandmother came down here either during the camp meeting ground or soon after that and bought the cottage that Jack and Fleeta Metcalf now live in. I believe it's the one that runs up from Blair's.
Main Street?
No, it's the one over from Main Street. My grandmother and her sister Anna Eyre lived in that cottage for a number of years until she married my grandfather, Ralph Lindsay Flanders. She and my grandfather finally moved from that cottage and rented what is now the Crowfoot's house, which then was owned by Ira Cope. Ira Cope, in the late, early 1900s or in 1910 or 12 thereabouts, was building a new house up on the hill above there, which is later became Pingree's and so forth and so on. And at the time he completed that house, my grandfather bought the house that the Beauforts now lived in. And my great aunt inherited the cottage that they formerly had and sold that and then purchased a cottage, two houses down Shore Road from my grandfather's and lived there until she died.
What was her name?
Her name, Anna C. Eyre.
And what was your grandmother's name?
Mary Eyre Flanders. That house, together with a garage barn above it, and to the right, a caretaker's cottage, and a lot that now contains another house where the original purchase my grandfather made. He later sold the cottage site that it now has a greenhouse on it to a family from Philadelphia, which then passed on to several families.
You're talking about the corner of Broadway and Cove?
Right.
The original purchase.
Cove, as I understand it, owned from the waterfront to Route 1 at that point in time, running from the edge of the Crowfoot's property down to the beyond, essentially as far as I can find out, maybe the creek, and then some version back from the road all the way to Route 1.
More than 10 acres?
God only knows. I think that the Pingree Estate, as I call it, has some 40 acres. I'm not sure. My grandfather's place was probably at the maximum a couple acres, maybe a little more. The other house that we have lived in was the caretaker's cottage, which we lived in as a teenager, and then after we were married, we used the cottage for a number of years, and later on, we inherited the house at 78 Broadway, which was owned by a cousin of my grandfather's, Von Hamilton, and his wife, Julia Hamilton, who also lived in the Boston area at the time.
You told me earlier about his occupation?
My grandfather was general manager of the New England Conservatory of Music, and Von was an accomplished musician and was a violinist at the New England Conservatory of Music and at the BSO. A couple of interesting facts about Vaughn was that he was a very close friend of Pierre Monteur when he was conductor of the BSO. In fact, my cousin Julia used to sit with Mrs. Monteur at concerts. He was a good friend of Arthur Fiedler. Arthur Fiedler and Pierre Monteur have both been at this house. And probably the more interesting thing is that Harry Ellis Dixon was his student. And during the time that after Vaughn retired, had Vaughn's chair at BSO when he played in symphony.
Do you know how they originally found out about Bayside?
Vaughn and Julia found out of Bayside through my grandfather. During sort of the heyday of his existence, a number of people related to the BSO and the New England Conservatory visited here and to some extent bought houses. The only other one I know of was with the BSO, with the New England Conservatory of Music, was a family that lived down at the end of Kelly's Cove by the creek. Her niece, her nephew, now in the cottage, I knew her as Aunt Alice, and she was a very colorful redhead who taught singing, I believe, voice. Julia also talks about the times up at the Cove House where they used to have musicales, and I think at various times probably some members of either the conservatory or the DSO were up here as part of that those concerts from the way Julia talks.
So they were drawn to the area.
They've drawn to the area originally through my grandmother's family, my grandfather's marriage into it, and the related families that came here through associations with my grandfather.
Were they Methodist? Were they drawn to the campground when it was religious?
As far as I can find out, the Methodist camp meeting really had no effect on my family's residence here in Bayside. My family, to be polite, was not a church-going type of group. One of my memories growing up was every night in the living room of my grandfather's house, two tables of bridge would be set up with a slight challenge of 52 cents a hundred for the score, which was kept very accurately, and a side table that, shall we say, did not hold soft drinks. During this period of time,
what years are we talking about?
We're talking probably the earliest I can remember is probably 33, 34. People that I remember at this time through my grandfather and my mother, starting from the South Shore, there is a family called, was called Mortimer. He was an engineer from New York. Then there were the Mannings, another engineer in New York that lived in Englewood, New Jersey, who had two children approximately my age, Hugh and Judy. Then down on what is now Rogers Lane, at the foot of the street were a family called the Blasters. He was with Great Northern Paper Company. Above him in John Crow's house was a person I knew as Bro White. who had a son, Al Clements, who we played with. And above that was the Rogers Cottage, now owned by the grandsons of Rogers. Selma, what was Bobby Webster and my mother were contemporaries and great friends. She was then Bobby Rogers. Another good friend of my mother was the daughter of Dolly Crapon, who at the time was named Junely. You remember what Sybil's mother's name was? Sybil, she's now identified for this purpose as Sybil Head's mother. Dolly Cunley. And later married an architect from the Boston area called Sawyer. Dolly had two children, Brent and Sybil, who we grew up with. Brent was, to my knowledge, a fair amount older because he was at MIT when I was wandering around here, so we looked at him as an older kid.
Most colorful character that I can recall
is
your child.
Was a guy called Captain Goodwin. Well, there are two of them. And then there was Jack McGaskill. Captain Goodwin ran a boat that was hired out for lobster baits and various other types of parties. We used to go over to Marshall's Cove on his boat and have clam bakes. Jack McGaskill was the local trash collector and ice delivery man. I remember him when he used to bring ice into our ice box, but more importantly, Jack was known for counting the liquor bottles in the trash can as he picked them up, and reporting throughout the community how many bottles were in each trash can. Well, my grandmother had a very good solution to this, as David Crowfoot found out after he bought the house. Because of the number of people in our house, there were always a few extra bottles to be disposed of. And she used to throw them over the banking every morning. And when David started to clean up the bank one time, he found all this broken glass, which was the result probably of 40 or 50 years of, shall we say, disposal of inappropriate garbage.
But she created her own liquor landfill.
That's right.
Yes. And so what made the first character, the lobster boat man, so colorful?
Well, Captain Gooden, just because he was Captain Gooden, and he was probably the first boat I ever was on. And going over to Marshall's Cove, which at my age of 6 or 7, seemed about the end of the earth. McGaskill, just because he was sort of a crazy old man.
Remember what they looked like? Were they tall? Heavy?
Jack, Captain Gooden, I have no idea. Jack McGaskill, I remember, sort of a thin, average height, older man.
Were they married?
That I don't know. Jack had what seemed to me a 1920s Ford pickup truck. But, you know, who knows what it was.
And they lived right here in the village?
Captain Gooden, I believe, lived in the house that Peter Allen now has. Where Jack McGaskill lived, I have no idea.
Across from the Malones.
My wife says across from the Malones.
Did they die here?
They disappeared off the face of the earth, as far as I'm concerned.
So that makes them a big mystery.
Right.
Very colorful mystery.
Another group of people that I remember as a kid were Harry Emmons. Harry Emmons lived diagonally across from my grandfather's house in a group of three houses. He and his father had the rearmost house. He was the town constable and somewhat the caretaker of my grandfather's house. Below his house, and
this is Shore Road.
On Shore Road was a family called Preto, spelling I have no idea how, who had two children, a boy and a girl. The boy I played with extensively. One day in the fall when I was up here, I actually went to school with him. And
you went to school here?
One day.
You went one day at school here. What was the name of the school?
I have no idea.
In Belfast?
No, it was here in Northport at the corner of Belfast Road, I guess, and Cross Road. No longer there. It was a one-room schoolhouse. Later on, this side of the road was the original version of the Bayside store, gas station, run by a guy by the name of Harry Pierce. And he had after the war, mechanic called Slim.
World War II?
World War II. Their gas station was relocated to where the Bayside Country Store, or Bayside Store is now, when they relocated Route 1, which used to come down Cross Street and then go out Bayside Road.
Do you remember the price of gas back then?
No idea.
Sure, it was a lot less. Maybe not during the war.
Well, during the war, who knows? Coming up to Bayside, I never came by boat. My grandfather, when he was up here during the summer, if he had to go to Boston back in the early 30s, I can remember us going into Belfast and him taking the boat back to Boston for business. I can remember, I believe, one time my mother went back with him. Coming up, we used to drive from Brookline, Massachusetts up to here. It was a long day.
What time of year was this?
We would come up the 1st of May and go home the 1st of October. I was pulled out of school and came up. We'd drive up through Portland and then up to Augusta. Then to Belfast by some roads that I don't remember.
Were these two-lane roads?
Very early, basically tarred roads. The reason we didn't go through Bath is because of the ferry. Once they put the bridge in, we would come up through Bath. Later on, I lived out in Illinois, and we used to come every summer from Illinois, taking 3 days to come over the highways, most of the time going through Detroit into Canada and coming out somewhere around Buffalo. One time we took the ferry from Buffalo to Detroit. When the war came, and we moved to Washington, and moved down to Bayside by train.
Did the war have an impact on the community here?
Well, the community...
World War II?
During the 30s,
Bayside,
in my estimation, was a fairly quiet place. The people I've talked with, the friends I played with, plus a guy by the name of Robert Leonard, whose house was above Dolly Crapon's, later burned, and his mother purchased the cottage that's now on the corner of C Street and George Street, which was originally located down by the creek, not by Community Hall, and was a candy store. When Sybil's mother bought it originally, it stayed there as a sort of refuge where kids played, and then later made it into a small cottage, which I believe Sybil stayed in. When Mrs. Leonard's cottage burned, she bought it and eventually relocated it where it is now.
I wanted to ask you about the effect of the Depression on the community. Were there less people coming to the community during those years?
The Depression, as I remember it, was mostly vacant cottages. I did not know many of the people that lived within the main area of town and down by the Auditorium Park. I don't remember a single person I played with, because of the people I was knew that were further down, or I was up here at our cottage at the north end of town. I just, all the houses could have been empty, all of them could have been full during the Depression. My feeling is during the Depression, they were basically empty. We had, I consider, think, probably less than 15 boats in the harbor. I only remember two or three. A gentleman by the name of Pollitt, who was Jen and Patty's father, had a big runabout with an outboard motor. Captain Gooden had his boat. And there was a Chris Craft owned by Eben Bassett. And I believe John Short had a sailboat. And that's all I remember.
So the Depression didn't have an impact on your family with coming to Bayside?
No, not a bit. Once the war started, however, Bayside became a haven for children. There were a number of people that had cottages down here that had brought children. During the summer, we had a community of 50 to 100 kids that wandered around, played. Early in the war, my grandfather and the overseers allowed the community hall to be opened up twice a week so the kids could have dances and shows and anything else they wanted to have the kids have something practical to do.
So would you look back at that time as a turning point with children's lives here in the community being more attended to with entertainment and...
Yes, we had, at that time, we had three or four parents that worked very hard working with the kids. We had Kelly Crosskill, who lived in Bangor and whose family was down here. We had a guy by the name of Mulvaney, who was a school teacher in Keene, New Hampshire, and spent the summers here. We had the Shorts. We had George Bryant, who was ran a jewelry store. His father, and he ran a jewelry store in Bangor, who was interested in the kids. We had Alois Leonard, Bob Leonard's mother, who used to run treasure hunts. And they and other people who I can't think of at this time spent a lot of time working with the kids. When we set these dances up, we were very fortunate to have Mr. Crosskill's eldest daughter, Eleanor Fuller, down here in the summertime, who had a Victrola. And she volunteered to monitor the dances, provide the music so the kids could dance Tuesdays and Saturday nights. Gordon Fuller's mother.
So you were a teenager at this time. So you were
early teenager, right, and through high school.
You were born in 1928.
Right.
So during the war years, you were about
13 to 18. After the war, I don't know much about the 50s, since I wasn't around here except for odd times during this couple of weeks. We moved to Atlanta, came up for 2 weeks in the summertime, and in 66 moved back to Boston permanently and started spending our summers here. As far as I can find out, during this time, more and more people were coming to Bayside, either through family relationships or because of the location of Bayside to the water and to other areas. It was a convenient commuting place, and more kids were spending their summers here. During this time, a gentleman by the name of Walter Downs retired as a school teacher and decided to set up a sailing program for the kids. To my mind, this was probably one of the most important forward movements for Bayside, since most of the kids that were around here immediately decided to learn how to sail. He started out with three cat boats that the yacht club purchased, winding up with six and running a sailing program for 15 to 20 years, using the children that grew up and learned how to sail under his system to teach the younger kids. This in turn led these children, such as my two daughters, to want Lindsay and Gwendolyn, or Wendy, to want their own boats. And many of the boats that you see in Bayside today are a result of that sailing trip.
Any particular memories of the dock?
The dock, when I first grew up, the dock had a house on it, which was later used by the yacht club. House also had a place that could store equipment, and several of the people that I knew used to dive off the edge of the roof of that into the water.
Pretty daring.
Henry Van Fleet was one, and members of the Leitner-Metcalf family were others that I remember. The wharf at that time had only a boat float, which we used to swim off of. With there not being many boats, it wasn't much of a problem. Sometime, and I'm not sure exactly when, my cousin Vaughn had a swimming raft down here, which he donated to the town, which they used as the first swim floor when the activities got a little too heavy for people to swim both off, swim and have boats use the boat floor.
Were most of the people using the dock residents of Bayside, or were they coming in from Belfast and other communities? Mary Alcapircha is reviewing Messiah Hunt 2. I asked a question before the tape ran out. Were residents other than Bayside using the dock and the swimming area? People from Belfast or outside the community? This is mostly Bayside residents.
My remember, during the 30s, Belfast was an expedition, so I don't remember anyone from Belfast ever being down. In the 40s, we started to get some of the kids from Belfast coming down here, working, playing with the summer residents. And I think it probably filled up from there. I know Wendy and Lindsay had a number of friends from Belfast, which meant that the mix of the kids coming down here with cars and people having cars and easy access to Bayside, making the access much better. As far as boating is concerned, I don't remember many people from Belfast having boats down here, but I'm sure there was a stray boat or two here once the war was over and people started coming back to Bayside.
So you said that you inherited this house from your second cousin?
Something like that.
Cousin twice removed, and the name again was?
Vaughn and Julia Hamilton.
Do you remember your mother and father in 30s, or did you?
Our family, until I inherited this house, basically stayed in the compound my grandfather bought, comprised the house that the Crowfoots now own, the barn behind it, the caretaker's cottage.
Is it called the Longford?
We always knew it as the caretaker's cottage.
Okay.
And then my great aunt's house, which was two houses down. Growing up, there was in what we called the big house, my mother, myself, and my mother's middle sister, older sister, Frances. Her eldest sister, Evelyn, and her family lived in the caretaker's cottage. The barn, which was the old servants' quarters for the Cove, had something like five bedrooms in it, and was used at various times for surplus families and to house various people if there was no other housing for within the family.
With all these relatives, what relatives, if any, do you still have living in Bayside?
As we go forward, I had also, once we got a little further on, a brother and sister. My sister lived in the garage with Ralph at a later date because there were two apartments. Currently, in town, as residents, are my sister, who bought the house that was rebuilt on the site where Harry Emmons lived after those houses, three houses burned. My cousin Ralph and his family. My wife is also summered in Bayside, even though she lives in New York. Her roots were in the Bangor area, and her aunt had a cottage here.
Her name is the wife.
My wife is Zelma Huntoon. Her aunt was Francina Morey, who owned a cottage on Main Street, which Zelma's nephew, Ken Lopez, and we lived here. In addition, my cousin Ralph's nephew spends time here in the summertime. And the cottage that my aunt Ann at one time owned, which passed on to my aunt Evelyn, was owned by her eldest son, Snelling, who sold it a couple of years ago because he wanted to remain in North Carolina in the summertime because his child was getting to an age where coming to this area was good for him.
Are any of your childhood friends still around?
Childhood friends, yes. Adelaide Lincoln is here. Sybil Head comes on occasion. Growing up, Eleanor Wagner during the war moved up here during the war and was part of the great clutch of kids that were wandering around. Bob and Jean Witherell. Jean spent her summers here. Came from the Massachusetts area. Bob Witherell, his family lived on the South Shore, came from Waterville. Dick Lagner spent his summers here at the sailing camp and met Eleanor, who lived in the same area. And then there was the Short family. They had three daughters, Joanne Coughlin, Tammy Trenholm, and Mary Ellen Connor, I believe. Joanne was several years older than we were, and as a result, during the war, she was pretty much graduated from high school and working. Her middle sister, Pammy, was the same age as my wife, and they became fast and lifelong friends. Then there are a number of people who have come and gone. Bob Leonard, we have pictures of Bob and myself playing on the beach as 18 or 2 month or 2 year old kids. He's, until he died, he spent his summers here. Sybil, Junely now Head, still comes up here periodically.
How did you meet your wife, Zelma?
Zelma's aunt spent her summers in Orono, Maine. She's a school teacher in New York City. She rented her house in the wintertime to a school teacher who lived in Orono and spent his summers here in Bayside. A gentleman by the name of Jason Tibbetts, who also ran the store that was where Blair's real estate operation. The store was also the post office. One summer, Mrs. Tibbetts asked Francina if she would mind coming down and taking care of the kids while she can in the Orono house. Annie Fran said she would and brought Selma down. They stayed for 2 weeks, and at the end of the 2 weeks, Selma said she wanted a house here, and Annie Fran bought a house. So the next summer, Selma was up full time, and I got to know her then. And in,
what year was this?
43, 44. The summer of 1946, Selma spent the summer carving her name, address, and I believe phone number on the wharf. And I moved from Chicago to New Jersey, and looking for someone I knew in the area, copied Selma's phone number out of the book, off the wharf, and called her up that fall. Started going around off and on in 47, and finally married in 56 or 55. One of a number of Bayside marriages. The Wagners being another one, and the Witherells being another one.
Have there been a lot of marriages and courtships from Bayside?
Well, I would say that over the years there probably been a fair amount. Several of my daughter's friends have met people in Bayside. I can't remember who they are. The Metcalf Sheehan, who is George Metcalf. Judy Metcalf, met here. Others, I just don't know.
Were there any, you mentioned about carving the name in the wharf, and it brings to mind, were there acceptable certain rules of behavior that were expected here?
None.
So carving and graffiti was okay.
Carving on the wharf was a time-honored tradition, and it seems to remain a time-honored tradition. Right up to the present time.
I noticed it's on the boathouse there, or the house.
The problem is the last reincarnation of the wharf put plastic wood on the deck, which cannot be carved. Otherwise, my feeling is that the base of the wharf would be filled with initials. That's the first thing anyone did once they got a hold of a knife when they were a kid of any age.
What do they do with the old wharf when they took it away? Were people asking for pieces of wood that had their initials on it?
Well, the present wharf was put in because the former wharf was condemned.
What year was this?
Selma, do you remember when they replaced the wharf? Talking about the wharves, there were a number of wharves which were demolished by sea action. The latest wharf came as a result of the previous wharf being condemned because the pilings had eroded to a point where they were sometimes only 2 or 3 inches thick, and became unstable and were to a point where we couldn't use it. We were very fortunate that the state came up with probably 95 to 99% of the root cost of the rebuilding. So we were fortunate to watch as the wharf came down. One of the first things that came off of it was the old windbreaker, which had years and years of initials in it. At the time they brought this over onto the shore with a crane, it was sort of in four or five parts, and Dan Webster III, as he's known, and his son, Dan Webster IV, started taking the wharf apart to save the various initials, planks, with the idea that it might have some use in the future. Blair Einstein gathered them together, and what happened after that, I don't know. But those initials were saved as much as they could be, and at the time, the Websters were dismantling it. I believe a number of people gathered around and picked up boards with their initials in.
Okay, I want to talk about the various businesses that used to be here. You mentioned a candy store, the general store, post office. I understand there were a few restaurants.
When I was first a kid here, I remember a store at George Street, right kitty corner to where the pump and library, where the Bartlett's house is.
This is
a store that the Weisenbachs now own.
It's called Grand Central.
I don't know what the name of it is. But
directly across from Blair Einstein.
That's right. It was a general store. The building that Blair was in is in now. I don't remember what it was when I was a kid, because the building right below it was the post office. And I don't remember anything else being in it but the post office. Then up in the house, I believe that Jack and Judy Metcalf lived, was a photo store. Those are the only three stores that I remember as a kid. The store up at the corner of George Street that the Bartletts were in was the Hastings store. The Bartletts, put it on the line, yeah. Later on, the building that Blair is in, Jason Tibbetts put a store in. And
what year are we talking about, Joe?
Talking about during the wartime, is all I can remember.
In the 40s.
And the post office was relocated up there. Blair had a general store in there, or Jason Tibbetts had a general store in there during the war. And so there were two stores. By that time, the photo shop had closed down.
What kind of photo shop was it? Developing?
All I can remember is there was a photo store up there, and I think it was in the Metcalf's complex. I just have a bare memory of it, that's all.
Okay. How about restaurants?
When I grew up here as a kid, there was nothing here until Madeline, the wife of the guy that owned the water company, name I forget at the present time, Madeline Howard, built a store, a restaurant at the corner of George and Broadway. It's the best I can explain it. And opened up a small restaurant there that was there for 2 or 3 years and then closed and was later converted to a private home.
I heard she was a good cook.
She was an excellent cook. Later on, my aunt and uncle, Robinsons, when he retired, he opened up what was called the Little River Inn here at Little River, and Madeline cooked breakfast up there, and they were breakfast to be remembered.
What do you remember about them?
Just that they were marvelous breakfasts.
Big breakfast?
Whatever you wanted. And that's, I think, basically what she did down here at the small restaurant that she had here in Bayside. What happened in the 20s and the teens here, I don't remember. We did have an inn here, and I think that they served meals, but I have no... My knowledge of the inn was that it was a private home, so I don't know when they stopped using that as an inn, and when they stopped feeding.
Do you remember the smells of Bayside growing up?
The only smells I remember of Bayside are seaweed.
How about beans?
No beans.
No beans down this end.
Well, at my grandfather's. I don't ever remember having beans Saturday night. I'm sure we did, but I don't remember it.
Do you recall any lady that used to make beans and sell them off by Park Road?
No. Because of where we lived, and the only thing I really did in the wharf area was swim off the wharf. I don't remember really any people in the park. Where we used to play as kids was in Bayview Park. There were a number of kids that lived in that area. You know, we used to play our evening games, like kick the can, were played at Bayview Park. We never played in Ruggles Park. I can't remember any time I ever played in Ruggles Park.
Any other games you remember besides kick the can?
That was our basic nighttime
game. Did you have a curfew?
I never had a curfew.
Was there a curfew?
There was a curfew in Belfast during the war. 9 o'clock, you could hear the fire whistle blow. But I don't remember here many kids that all of a sudden said, "Oh, I've got to go home." When it got dark and we couldn't see anymore, we went home or went to someone's house. But that came more and more as we were teenagers. But with the advent of the activities at the community hall, this is pretty much the kids congregated during the summer.
You mentioned there were dances at the community hall?
Dances twice a week, Tuesday and Saturday night, with Eleanor running her Victrola. We saved up enough money to buy a Wurlitzer phonograph
which we were able to now beat a lot of records. We also, during the summer, had a variety show. This Mulvaney and Crosskill were the end men, and the kids did various and sundry things to flush out the show. I don't know what else.
I think you have movies at the community hall?
The movies in the community hall ended in the 20s. As far as I remember, when we were kids there, they still had the projection booth. But that was all. During the 30s and 40s, when we were here, if it was a rainy day and you had transportation, you'd go to the matinee Belton. I can remember us climbing into my aunt's car, which was a coupe with a huge trunk in it. Kids packed into the trunk and sitting in the front seat, going into the 2 o'clock movie.
Anybody famous ever live here in Bayside?
Well, Cole was probably our most famous resident. He was a gentleman who married a lady from Belfast. He owned what my grandfather referred to as the Traction Railroad Company in Chicago. Built the house my grandfather later bought in Crocus, and the big mansion on the hill. He is reported to have left money to educate Waldo County students. And at one point in time, according to some of the records, tried to have Shore Road relocated to go around his property rather than through his property.
And he didn't meet with any success. Joe, what offices have you held in Bayside?
After we moved back from Atlanta, I was a member of the Yacht Club and wound up as treasurer and later commodore of the Yacht Club. Later on, got active with the Northport Village Corporation, served on the Board of Appeals, was an overseer, and later president of the corporation for, I believe, 5 years. This last position, to me, was sort of very important because my grandfather had served as president of the corporation for, I believe, 25 years. It was always sort of a childhood dream that I could follow in his place, which I was able to do.
How is Bayside different now from all these years you've been coming here? What major changes have you noticed?
Bayside...
the last, let's say, 10 years.
Well, starting at the beginning, very few people here, little boating, not a lot of people I knew other than the immediate family relationship. When we moved back in the 60s, the burgeoning from the group that was here in the 40s with lots of families spending a complete summer with their kids here, and our kids making a lot of close friendships which have lasted to today. This has changed with the problem of both parents working today, and most of the kids and parents today come from one for a period of 1 week, 2 weeks, maybe a month. The other big change that has happened over the years is the boating activities that have taken place. From few, if any, boats during the 30s to the yacht club program of the 40s, where there were few boats racing, to the 50s and 60s, where more and more boats were racing, and probably the high point in the 60s and 70s, where at one race we had something like 20 boats racing in a very active yachting club program. With the change in family styles, racing program has decreased to some extent, where they're racing 9 or 10 boats on an active basis. And many families now have boats. During the summers, we have counted up to 70 or 80 boats in the harbor, ranging from where I live on the North Shore down to Kelly's Cove on the South Shore. These boats are not maybe raced as much, but certainly actively used by the people who own them.
How about architecture changes, the houses themselves?
Well, I would say the major thing that has happened here in Bayside has not been really architectural changes, but preservation. Practically everyone that buys a house here starts fixing it up